So welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace and prosperity in Europe. And here now about the debt levels of the European states. That is, of course, very worrying. Now with this fourth major shock, which we had in the last 12 years from the great financial crisis, the migration shock, the debt shock, the Brexit, the Ukrainian war. No, it's much more shocks. Yeah. So we have now the Corona shock. And this was very expensive. All in all, remember, we had this debate about the Maastricht criteria. That was 60% GDP and debt ratio, debt to GDP. This is the most important ratio in that podcast now. I will discuss a lot about it. So let me explain. That's the overall economic output in relation to the national debt level. And we have now reached in the Eurozone 100. Look, that's of course about the same. Let's see what the Americans have finally after all this. But it's a major issue. It's a milestone to be marked. We are now having the same debt level like the output in the Eurozone. And of course, it's quite worrying. Obviously, we have to discuss how to repay this debt, because the idea that debt is no longer doesn't matter because interest rates are low. Let's not go into irrational exuberance and kind of illusionary talks about easy debt or magic debt or debt doesn't matter. Debts matter, and debts matter a lot. And they matter obviously very much in relation to the GDP. When we have as well shrinking GDPs or stagnating GDPs, then obviously the old debt is getting bigger. So we have to discuss how to reduce debt and what to do. Let's be systematically and first analyze a little bit the situation more deeper. I'm very much for the 2020 debt package. It was good, the mutualization of debt, because we have saved, again, the southern Europeans. As you know, I call as well for an infrastructure package for Eastern Europe now in 2020. One with another 750 billion. So there's nothing bad on new debt when it's invested wisely into infrastructure, or when it is necessary to help economies in a big external shock. But we have to also discuss how to grow faster, how to be more open, more economically successful, and also how to reduce this debt level in relation to GDP. Obviously, it's very clear the road ahead, and it can be summed up very simple. We need to conclude more free trade agreements, first of all with America, and then ratify the Mercosur agreement. We need lower taxes to grow faster, to have investments paying off faster. So lower taxes is what the governments can do. We need to privatize in order to reduce the state debt level. And we need to enlarge the European Union and the Eurozone. Stop. I can already stop the podcast because that's the simple version of what we need to do. And if we don't do that, if we don't unite more, open more, and also build the structures we need and unite all Europeans who want in the EU, then we definitely will fail. And we will not stay at 110, but we will go up and up and up. Some anyhow want it. But it will be a very bleak future for the youth. And it's not that this debt which we have taken, we don't need to repay. We need to repay. Maybe there will be also time of higher interest rates once in the future. And what we will do then? So ultimately, it's time to make a smarter, better, more competitive European economic policy, more unity, more common debt, and less member state debt. And how to achieve that, I will discuss it. But first, let's go into some of the most extreme cases. We have now Greece, about 205 of GDP. And that's pretty stark. Then Italy is above 160, maybe 165. Let's see the final numbers, because these are still the 2020 third quarter numbers. And the whole Corona winter bills is not fully now in Statista online. You can see all the data on Statista.com. It's a very recommendable website. Portugal, 130. Cyprus, 120. France, 116. Yeah. Spain, 114. Belgium, 113. And then it goes to the countries with lower debt level, below 100, which is obviously much more reasonable. And let's not forget, some of the countries in Europe, yeah, like for example Czech Republic, only 40%, Luxembourg is a bit of an exemption, but Estonia, 18%, Bulgaria 25, Sweden 40, Denmark 40, Romania 43, Latvia 44, Lithuania 45, Netherlands 55, yeah, they are still in the Eurozone criteria, in the Maastricht criteria, and so is Slovakia. And by the way, Poland, Ireland you can count in, Finland 67, then Germany 70, we will see the final count. Austria still here is ranked at 80. In reality, yesterday the news of the was that we have reached 90. So we are at this mess, and it is quite substantial. But it's also very different in all of the European Union, and we should try to be more united, but not to somehow make it easier for the southern Europeans to live on the cost of northern Europeans, and for the Eastern Europeans to be neglected. No, we have now significantly helped the Southern Europeans in the 2020 package, and now it's time to help the Eastern Europeans with infrastructure interconnectivity, which makes a lot of sense as well in terms of strategic security and NATO unity in Eastern Europe, in the Balkans and in Ukraine and in Turkey. Very important. It is also that the infrastructure there is lacking a lot, because as I've showed already in many of the highways, energy and high-speed railway networks, we have the ancient infrastructure in Eastern Europe, often a legacy of the Soviet Union, of communism, or actually even of the Austrian monarchy. And, you know, we are now 120 years that's gone, and so we really need an infrastructure push east. That must be funded together, all of us together. But at the same time, we have also to make sure that the southern Europeans, especially France, Italy, Greece, Cyprus, because you see the crisis, if you count Belgium to some extent to the southern Europeans, and the Liga of over 100% of debt, yeah, that's all the southern Europe, Greece, Italy, Portugal, Cyprus, France, Spain, Belgium, that's all over 110%. And as Mr. Miklos has said in the interview, that's of course, you know, keeping some of the Eastern Europeans back to join the Eurozone. And that's we have to also offer them something more decent. That's also part of the reason for this infrastructure package. But also we have to make sure that the Southern Europeans really fundamentally reform their economic model towards the Eastern European success model of lower taxation, faster privatization, more liberalization, more openness, labor market flexibility, and lower taxes. So, most important in the short term, and you know, some things might take a long time because you cannot start things fast. And the first important thing is the openness towards trade, because that can be relatively fast done, and it's the most important short-term effectiveness. So here we have to ratify the Mercosur agreement and put it temporarily in force. That's very important growth signal for Europe and the world, because that's the most significant trade area then of the world, and that's what we should do. And all these kind of green fanatics who want to degrowth us and take us down as European project by blocking Mercosur agreement, they are the enemies of freedom, of growth, of Europe. They are the real anti-Europeans. They must be fought wherever they can be, because who is against Mercosur free trade agreement is against the upgrading of the poor people of Southern America, but also against us recovering from this crisis in a decent way. Second, and even more important medium term, is the transatlantic free trade agreement called TTIP, or if you want to have a different name, it's fine. But the US and the UK and the EU need a common free trade agreement. Obviously, it can be two agreements if it's necessary, but quite similar they should be between the US and the UK and the US and the EU. And here the responsibility is again with the Americas, because the United States of America has to make sure that the United Kingdom is not collapsing. Because as I've shown on my Twitter feed now, it's the seventh major debt crisis coming of the United Kingdom. And contrary to us in the Eurozone, because we can, similar like the US now, we have this big currency, this second reserve currency, the euro. We can definitely work much longer with higher debt level. But the UK is already at 100. That's unprecedented since the Second World War. And that will be very difficult. They had 40 good years now in the European Union. And this double whammy of Brexit and Corona and this high debt level, of course, in the short term, you can pay your way out by printing money. But that will be very hard if there is no kind of clear free trade agreement and better market access to the United States. And then good luck, United States, if the UK is collapsing under this high debt level as it has already 6 times in the past. It will definitely run to mommy in Washington, and you will have to pay much more by saving the United Kingdom again, as you have to had to do it in the First World or Second World War, and so on, in all these various debt crises. And so who can want it? Nobody. So much better to open the product and the goods market by free trade agreements. And please give the same to the EU. That's really a major growth push for the world. If we finally can close this open, wide and ununderstandable gap of the free trade system that we, the NATO allies, EU, UK, US, have no free trade agreement. Now we have done it with the UK and the EU. There is an improvisation at the end of the last year, 2020. But now we need to get this done. And it's not so complicated, more or less. We are anyhow most advanced in the coordination. And the chlorinated chicken shall not bring down world trade, please. President Biden, Ursula von der Leyen, Boris Johnson, let's get these agreements done. This is really very important. And then obviously what we need is a growth model in Europe. It is lower taxes. Boris Johnson now wants to increase the corporation tax in order to please the populist left and whatever kind of crazy idea that is. But it's not the way forward. We need lower taxes, especially in Germany, in France, in Italy, in Spain, in the United Kingdom. We need to have taxes, lower income taxes, and definitely not higher taxes, but lower taxes. So I call for France and Germany to have 20% corporation tax, Italy 15%, Spain 15%, Greece 10%, because here especially growth is necessary. And that's very important. Lower taxes stimulate growth, make investments more reasonable, bring foreign direct investment and make it possible to grow again. And that will be the way to reduce the debt levels. And one of the key ways, obviously, is higher growth, because it's a relative figure towards GDP. So once we grow and our GDP is growing, then obviously the debt level is always relatively lower. So that's the most important, to have growth rates back above 4% in Europe. And for this, this is only possible with a lower taxation. So, and then we come to privatization. That's obviously very important as well. I have made many podcasts already about it in detail, but you see especially Italy, this kind of gigantic state sector from infrastructure to energy, privatize it. Greece, the whole fund for privatization to be swapped in one weeping swap with the EIB to reduce the debt level of Greece and also make privatization possible by the EU EIB competence and with the EBRD together, and where it's not possible to build European united infrastructure companies along European priorities in energy, infrastructure, motorways, ports, and not sell it to the Chinese and the Russians. That's obviously very clear. I made many podcasts about that one as well. Privatization, obviously, in the more developed equity markets of the West, it's easy. In Austria, 49% of Asfinag out, and that's our motorway company. And then 49% of state railways out on the capital markets. IPO, very easy to be done, no problem. Where it's not possible, then in Greece or in the Balkans, where the assets are, there is no market, no liquidity, then united in Brussels with a debt for equity swap. And whoever is against privatization, then at least to Europeanization of the state companies, because there will be less jobs for the boys then, there will be more rational investment decision, and there will be better management along European priorities and better investment. I've made already the case how much investment Eastern Europe needs, and then we need also the structures to do it. So such European infrastructure companies in energy, railways, waterways is anyhow very important in order to develop Eastern Europe with European funding, not only funding, but paid by the European Union, not relying on the 20, 100 years maybe until they can pay it in Ukraine and in Kosovo. No, we need to pay this infrastructure from the European level directly. and also then build it, but coordinated obviously and co-owned by the countries. That's of course the best way to do it. Then obviously what is so important is the enlargement of Eastern Europe. The whole podcast now, I'm talking months now about EU enlargement. But the logic is again the same. Include all the countries in the European Union, NATO, in the Eurozone, and make sure that they are first of all stable in the euro. They have a prosperous currency, the euro. They obviously have much less debt anyhow than the southern Europeans. So they will reduce the average level of debt in the European Union. And also they will bring a lot of people. And that's another 67 million people who work hard, who want to improve their life, as it has been in the 2000s with the first enlargement or second enlargement, the Big Bang enlargement of the 10 and ultimately 13 countries. Now to bring in these 9 countries as well brings a lot of additional resources into the European internal market, and that will be a factor for competitiveness. And that's very good. You know, that will help to develop all Europe, but also the overall internal market of the European Union will be strengthened with the additional input of 67 million new people. And obviously the 9 countries will be then also, of course, they have a lot of need for infrastructure. That's for those who love this infrastructure, Keynesian kind of growth model, very important. But also there will be a lot of additional free market growth model by lower competitive countries, lower tax countries, who are adding more people into the internal market. And that's very good. So that's the way for growth and how to reduce the tax rates and the debt level. And again, you know, we can, of course, continue with the current malaise and misery for another 20 years because we are rich enough. We ultimately can maybe for another generation fund the Southern European growth model, non-growth model, degrowth model, if you want, where they keep the taxes like Western European countries and they stay in the euro. Obviously, we subsidize them via the euro system, and obviously we can somehow subsidize them via having the summer season. But also already this summer season, 2021, will be very complicated with our travel restrictions. So you can be sure about that the debt level of the southern European countries will be significantly higher at the end of 2021, because the main income earner, the summer season, will be not very successful, unfortunately. So we are entering an even more complicated phase. And we can maybe for another decade then continue with this to subsidize the southern Europeans via the euro system and via such packages. But if they don't substantially change, nothing will be improved. And the change is very clear. We need on the Balkans 10% for Greece, I mean, that's a Balkan country, 10% taxation system for income and for corporate, and 15% for Italy and Spain and Portugal. And then also to make sure that the internal sector markets, the labor market, the land markets, are reformed according to European lines. That's why I call for a European Cadastre Agency, for labor market flexibility, for more openness always to the good market, to the goods markets, and for free trade agreements. And that's really the way forward. And also, for sure, and the privatization of the state railway companies, the state energy sector, again, either to privatize or to Europeanize. And with attached private, this kind of opening, this end of the state-run economies, this kind of state corporatism, which especially in Portugal and Spain has a big tradition in this nationalistic and socialist past, but also then it comes towards Italy, which has a huge sector. Alitalia is now anyhow gone already. The airlines are the first ones who break down under competitive pressure once they are kept into this kind of state custody for too long. But then also the railways and the highways and so on and so on. This is all a complete mess, and it has to be opened. Openness is the key to prosperity, and that will also change the economic model of Italy. And that is so important, because when you look where is the debt, most of the debt is with the three big ones. That's logically, France has most debt, 2.7 trillion. Italy 2.6, Germany 2.3 trillion. Germany is the only country which can afford this debt level seriously. And so we have to further mutualize. There's no doubt about it. I know that's unpopular to call for it, but I have already called very clearly for the Eastern infrastructure, But also basically what I call for with all my calls for this EIB debt equity swap is that we do indirect mutualization, that we don't simply accept that the Italian and French debt has to be mutualized, Europeanized, but it has to be Europeanized in exchange for the state companies. So we reform the countries of the South with this instrument. It's called debt equity swap. That means it sounds a bit complicated, but it's quite easy. They can transfer their debts and their assets towards the European level, towards the EIB. So the debts are shifted. They don't disappear, but they are shifted from Italy, from Greece, from Spain, also from France, and also from Austria, and also from everybody who wants, to the European level. And there also comes the equivalent of the state assets, the highways, the energy, the ports, the railways, and the other state mining sector, even land, you know, or whatever kind of assets there are. They are huge. Yeah? They are worth many trillions as well. So they move to the European level where they are either restructured, then invested in, and then managed better, less political corruption, less political control of the boards, no kind of Sebastian Kurz deciding who is the ÖBAG person. But, you know, he has to fight at least in the European Council, in the European institutions, who will be the head of the European railways, the head of the European energy holding, the head of the European waterway holding, and so on and so on. And there will be much more competent people than running such European infrastructure giants, obviously, because they are really huge. We have done that already with Airbus. It's the same model like Airbus. In the defense sector and in the airline industry, it was already necessary to do it. It was not fully Europeanized, but it was insofar that the member states have then built one common airline, aircraft and defense manufacturing company, Airbus. And it's owned by Spain and Italy, no, Spain, Germany and France at 25%, and the rest is at the private equity market. Yeah. So the same model as well for all of the sectors. And this is the best way to do it. And this is absolutely necessary if we want to be a successful continent. We need lower taxes to grow again. We need a euro, united euro. And we need a less arrogant European, Western Europeans who have their kind of beautiful fast trains and are already in the eurozone and manage the economies pretty badly, but exclude the Eastern Europeans from all this. And that's, of course, very negative. Yeah. And especially when it comes in this global competition, we are also in competition with the United States of America. They are much more successful, but they are our partners, friends, and allies. But we are also in competition, obviously, with China, with Russia. Russia extremely aggressive. So what will impress Putin? If we put 2,500 new American soldiers to Germany, while he puts 150,000 to the Ukrainian border, I don't think that won't impress him a lot. Yeah. But what really impresses him is the Euroization of Ukraine, the Eurozone enlargement of Romania and Poland. Let me forget, these were both more or less client states or part of the Russian Empire to some extent. Yeah. So this is really mattering, and this is long-term changes, which they will take note in Moscow as a big minus for them and a plus for us. So each free trade agreement, each more competitive tax system, each Eurozone member, each unilateral adaptation of the Euro in Eastern Europe, and each member in NATO and in the EU or in any of the subsequent small organizations I've mentioned already, that's something, you know, substantially changing the game in Eastern Europe. And that's obviously what the Russians want to block, because they understand the more united we are, the more powerful we are, the more prosperous we are, the more the prosperity differential between declining Russia and rising Europe is hopefully opening up. But for that, we need to do our homework. I mean, it's what the EU is about, free trade agreement. We are a free trade agreement ourselves, a trade unification integration bloc notified to the WTO under GATT before. That's what the EU is. So we need to get this done. And of course, we have now developed in a political unification project of Europe, Yes, but then let's get everybody in. Let's get Ukraine in, Moldova, Georgia. Let's get the Balkans in. If we are this political project, obviously we are, then, you know, let's unite Europe. If you don't believe in that, then you are wrong. And you should not resign or whatever, because you have not the dimension to understand the challenges of the time. And obviously there's a lot of racists in Brussels sitting in Paris who don't care for Eastern Europeans. They can die somewhere in the East and nobody cares in Paris. That's the truth. And that is not the nice truth. And I want to change that. We have to be more united. This is the way. This is the economic way to unite. And this is the way also for prosperity. Even in Paris, the people will be more richer, securer if this is all happening. And that is why it is important. So the crisis of Corona and the consequent debt crisis is, of course, very hard. And we have reached this 100% GDP debt ratio. That should be the wake-up call for really better economics. I'm working on since 20 years on that one, 25 years all in all. And it's now time to get this done. And it's absolutely necessary. More privatization in Southern Europe, all these debt equity swaps, lower taxes, SME-focused Europe, not dominated by the state corporate giants owned by the politicians and their crony friends, but a real open, transparent Europe, a successful Europe, which we can be proudly boasting that we go to the world and tell the world that this is really the model of Europe which is working and not the Asian or the American or the Russian model or the Chinese model. No, it's the European way of life we're all singing in Brussels, as I understand. But for this, we need the prosperity to really undermine and underline it, that this is a successful way. And it also must be some equality here, not between everybody in a member state, as the left is saying, but between the member states itself, between the regions. So we must build the infrastructure in the East, but at the same time, we must reduce the enormous debt level and this kind of low growth system of Southern Europe. It must be dismantled. And the way to do it, lower taxes, debt equity swaps, and a more reasonable kind of economic openness policy towards goods and people. Never forget as well, we are also very, very close towards new immigration. And that's a terrible thing what we are doing. Inhumane and a very shameful policy and towards migration. We need to be more open as well on that one. And that's what I have called, first of all, the Europeans, obviously with Ukraine, the Balkans inside, Moldova, Georgia, fully the pan-European labor market. But also then to make sure that the people are not drowning in the Aegean or Mediterranean, but we help them to integrate and we let them work. And we are the continent of hope, the new America of the 21st century, not only Germany, but the whole of Europe. And a place where we can really integrate successfully people because we are growing. Once there is growth back in Europe, there will be also a lot of more people coming, and that's very good, you know. It's not possible to have growth without migration, and that is also very important, yeah. And I call for this openness since 20 years, but, you know, the populists like Söder and Sebastian, at least Söder was now contained. I was very happy because he is a representative of this protectionist populist wing of the center-right. And unfortunately, he thinks he has this accolade, Mr. Sebastian Kurz, who has now made a recovery plan only with a big digitalization package, fine. And then whatever, the green recovery, yes, very interesting. No single concrete proposal, but the focus on long-term unemployed. That's also very important. You know, I'm for active labor market measures. But he has continued his protectionism, populism, his closing of the Balkans. At least he gave some vaccinations. That was at least some merciful step. But this is the whole wrong economic policy. No tax reform, no kind of openness towards Mercosur. Just tweeting for strategic partnership with America, but basically not doing anything concrete in terms of free trade agreement. Adding massive new debt levels, but while blocking Eastern European enlargement. Yes, that's the wrong way, and I hope it will be defeated. So what we need is more openness, lower taxes, SME policy, and also EU and NATO enlargement, and the free trade agreements, and the privatization of the state assets, and also the liberalization of the European Union sector market. And that hopefully will bring some reason back and some stable debt to GDP ratio over the next decade, once we probably have to face the next crisis again. And it would be good to be significantly below 100% of GDP, back to 80% by the 2028, because we hopefully then will have the fiscal space to face the next crisis, because whatever it will be, there will be a next crisis around, and we will definitely need fiscal space for that one as well. So growth is ultimately very much important to be ready to contain the next crisis. And so privatization, higher growth, more unity in Europe, more investment as well, and better investment conditions are the way for success of the European unification process in the decades of construction, unity and growth, which is the 2020s, as I hope, if there is wisdom. And that's what I hope for. Thanks a lot for listening. Bye.